makes a problem in that it's going to be hard for me to keep myself on time. So I'm going to ask Kurt, if you don't mind, to wave a hand as I get close to 30 minutes. Thank you. So I wanted to first recognize my co-authors on this presentation, Dwayne Griffith and Grant Jackson, also both from Montana State University. Dwayne was the one who took my models, my yield and protein models, put them into an economic model, and then made a very user-friendly tool, which I'll show you. And Grant Jackson, I couldn't have done this work without Grant because he provided a bulk of the data that I used for my protein and yield models. So a little background, small margins and fluctuating fertilizer, nitrogen, and grain prices, as Kevin just mentioned, have increased the importance of developing tools that assist growers and their advisors in determining economic optimum nitrogen rates. Traditional nitrogen rate guidelines of a certain mass of nitrogen per volume of grain, such as pounds of nitrogen per bushel, often do not take into account the contribution of mineralized soil organic matter, and generally are designed to optimize yield, not profit. And thirdly, in Montana, there's been numerous yield and protein nitrogen rate response studies that have been conducted on small grains following fallow, allowing the development of yield, protein, and economic models. The data that I used for these economic models included winter wheat. There was 70 site years of data ranging back from to the early 1970s, and that's going to be my focus today. We also developed spring wheat models, barley models. But what we found in each of the data sets was there was not enough recrop data in order to develop a recrop model. So instead, all my models that I'll show you today are for small grains following fallow, which is the major cropping system used in Montana. We found that quadratic plateau models fit yield data better than quadratic models. Those were the two that we tested. And so what does a quadratic model look like? It's going to look like this. Yield equals some constant A times total usable nitrogen minus another constant B times total usable nitrogen squared, where total usable nitrogen is the sum of three different factors: soil nitrate, fertilizer nitrogen, and nitrogen from organic matter. And that I allowed to vary. So I said the nitrogen released from organic matter was equal to a constant times the percentage of organic matter. When you take the derivative of this equation to solve for the yield maximizing nitrogen, you can then plug that yield maximizing nitrogen back into this first equation. And in so doing, you can get a relationship between B, A, and the maximum yield for each soil fertility trial. So what you find when you do this math is that B equals A squared divided by 4 times the yield times the maximum yield. And if you want to talk to me about the math afterwards, I'd be happy to help you. So, and again, Y equals the yield potential or the yield max when total usable nitrogen is greater than the yield maximizing nitrogen. So that just means that when it goes beyond this point in the nitrogen rate response curve, we're just going to set yield equal to the maximum yield. I optimized this model using S plus because I had two different constants in there. I had A and I had C, so I had to use some sort of model optimizing software. S plus does very well for that. What I found was that the constant before the total usable nitrogen was 0.58, and the other constant, the C constant, was 14.5. So I know this is only a regression, but I do like to think about what are the relevance of those two terms. What 0.58 means is that's how many bushels per acre can be grown from 1 pound of nitrogen per acre at a low nitrogen level. So that's essentially the slope of the curve at low nitrogen levels. The 14.5 suggests that about 14.5 pounds of nitrogen is released from the organic matter for each 1% organic matter. So just slightly higher than what Keith showed in the previous, where he assumed 10 pounds of nitrogen. This model found that about 14 pounds of nitrogen per acre are released per 1% organic matter. So how did the model do? What this graph shows is measured yield on the x-axis and modeled yield on the y-axis. And it does quite well. It produces an R squared of 0.92. From a predictive perspective, though, you have to keep in mind what I used for this model. What I used was I pulled off the maximum yield for each soil fertility trial, each nitrogen rate response trial. So I'm using data that you wouldn't know prior to the growing season. So keep that in mind. This is a somewhat inflated R squared. So once you have a model, now it gets fun. You can plug in different values. You can plug in different organic matter concentrations. You can plug in different yield potentials and see what effect that has on winter wheat grain yield. So on the x-axis, I have soil nitrogen to 3 feet plus fertilizer nitrogen in pounds per acre. And on the y-axis, I have winter wheat grain yield in bushels per acre for three different yield potentials, and I assume 2% organic matter, which is about the average organic matter in the state of Montana. What this shows is that at low nitrogen levels, all three of the responses are fairly similar, which should make some sense, meaning at very low nitrogen, really doesn't matter what else is going on, how high the yield potential is, because those crops are nitrogen limited. However, as nitrogen levels go up, the three curves really spread out. And so you can show a grower, for example, how much nitrogen you need to maximize yield at 70 bushels per acre versus at 30 bushels per acre. When I pull those maximum yields, when I pull the nitrogen levels that it takes to grow 30 bushels per acre versus 70 bushels per acre, I found that the pounds of nitrogen were about 2.3 per bushel at a 30 bushel per acre yield goal, and 2.9 pounds of nitrogen per bushel at 70 bushels per acre. MSU guidelines are 2.6 pounds of nitrogen per bushel, so about halfway in between, but it does suggest that somebody who's not growing much wheat, say down at 30 bushels per acre, is maybe over-applying nitrogen if they're using MSU guidelines, and they're under-applying nitrogen if they're trying to grow 70 bushels per acre. And this hopefully makes some sense to you, in that at a very low yield potential, the plant is getting a fairly high percentage of its nitrogen from organic matter. So it doesn't need as much. At a fairly high yield potential, it's getting almost none of its nitrogen from organic matter. It's getting most of it from fertilizer nitrogen. So that's why those two numbers are somewhat different. I also developed protein models, and what I found was that protein models that only contain total usable nitrogen work very poorly. We think because of our semi-arid environment, where our protein levels are highly a function of growing season climate. So what I determined was that protein levels were a function of total usable nitrogen and yield, not just total usable nitrogen. And I did a number of different models and found this model that's shown here to be about the best fit. It had an R squared of 0.58. I calculated marginal return, and I have to apologize. I'm a soil fertility specialist, not an economist, but my marginal return calculation was simply grain revenue minus fertilizer nitrogen cost, and grain revenue included not just the price of the grain, but also the protein discount or protein premium. Verifying this model, this is an area that I found to be fairly problematic. It's fairly simple to verify a yield model or a protein model with more recent data, but I find it's much more important to verify the economic optimum nitrogen rate. So how would you do this? Well, first you would need to decide what grain price would a user assume. Would they use a September futures price? Would they use today's price? Would they use a long-term average? What discount would a user assume? How would you know the actual economic optimum nitrogen rate from, say, just a 3-nitrogen rate trial? And what value would you use for yield potential for these soil fertility trials? You should also use data that's not in the model, yet the new data set is small in Montana. We only have 6 trials. So I feel the potential for an incorrect conclusion with any sort of model verification is high, meaning I might come out and say, yeah, the model works better than the MSU guideline. But again, there's all these assumptions that go into that. So if you do have ideas, I would love your input after the presentation today. So once you have an economic model, to me this is where it gets especially fun for an extension soil fertility specialist, because what I can do is show growers, show crop advisors the effect of available nitrogen on the x-axis, on marginal return on the y-axis, for a number of different scenarios. So here I show yield potential of 30 up to yield potential of 70. And it allows the grower to see how much nitrogen they should apply to maximize marginal return. It also shows them what would happen if they were, say, extreme optimists, thought they were going to get 70 bushels per acre, but instead get 30 bushels per acre. They would apply somewhere here, and they would have a net loss of maybe $20 or $30 per acre. A pessimist, on the other hand, might apply about 70 pounds of nitrogen per acre. If they actually got a yield of 50 or 70, they take a pretty big economic loss too. So it does start getting into the subject of risk and which side do they want to risk more heavily on. You can also show how organic matter affects the marginal return. For an organic matter of 3%, the optimum nitrogen rate is about 120 units, whereas over here at only 1%, it's about 150 units. So it shows the value of organic matter also to a grower. And now this is what growers really want me to plug in when I give presentations on this. They say, well, what if urea was $350 per ton and then it went up to $700 per ton? How much would it affect my economic optimum nitrogen rate? Well, it would go from about 145 units down to about 125 units. So they should back off by about 20. They knew they should back off, but this model gives them a better estimate of how much they should back off by. If grain prices were to go from $4 per bushel up to $8 per bushel, the model's not quite as sensitive to that change in wheat prices. It only shows a small change in economic optimum nitrogen rates. How about protein discounts? Something that has just been crazy over the last year. If I use a protein discount of 12 cents per quarter percent, the model predicts that you should apply about 170 pounds of nitrogen per acre. If the protein discount was 4 cents per quarter, the grower should only apply about 125 units of nitrogen. The overall changes in the marginal return aren't that high between these, but the actual nitrogen they should apply varies greatly depending on discount, and that's something the model allows you to show. In making this user-friendly, we wanted a web-based model rather than a spreadsheet. We thought it might get used a little more. We wanted something that was slider-driven. Instead of inputting something you could just change a slider and see an instantaneous response. We wanted the ability to run offline, so we could hand a disk to somebody and they could run it in the field when they didn't have access to the internet. And so we ended up using a program called Crystal Excelsius, which ties up very well and is compatible with Excel. So this is what the model looks like if you were to bring this up online. And there's introduction, there's information on yield, protein, net revenue, and there's also the actual yield responses. Yield, protein, and net revenue responses here across the top. So what the model allows you to do is see how much applied nitrogen, in this case, affects crop yield in bushels per acre. And you can change the available soil nitrate. You could bring it down to zero, which is how I like to run the model because I think in terms of total available nitrogen. You can change the organic matter and see what effect that has on the model, and you can change the maximum potential yield. So bring it down to 32 and see what effect that has. The next bar over is protein response. Again, applied nitrogen on the x-axis and percent protein on the y-axis. And you can see what effect increasing, say, organic matter has on percent protein. And the one, of course, the growers care most about is, well, what response do I get of applied nitrogen to my economic return? So here the y-axis is return over fertilizer cost, applied N on the x-axis. You can either run up to this peak and see that you need somewhere around 70 pounds of nitrogen per acre to optimize return, or you can just go down here where it lists the actual economic optimum nitrogen rate. So what happens if we change the maximum potential yield? Bring that back up, the shape of the curve change. What happens, for example, if nitrogen price goes down? It changes the shape of the curve. Or if wheat price, hopefully, goes up a little. Now we start getting a fairly flat curve at the end, which shows it doesn't matter as much how much nitrogen you apply, partly because as nitrogen goes up, protein discount goes up. And the bottom here is protein discount and protein premium. So right now we might have somewhere around 10 cents per quarter for a discount and only slightly below that for a premium. If we were to then go to net revenue versus yield, this shows the yield response in kind of the reddish yellow, and it shows the net marginal return response in blue. So again, let's take nitrogen up to a little more realistic level, say an average over the last year. It shows that the net economic optimum nitrogen rate is just somewhat lower than the nitrogen you should apply to maximize yield. And that's something a grower can relate to. Oh, I need to back off by about that much. And as you can see, one nice thing about Excelsius is you can download it right into a PowerPoint show. You can export it to PowerPoint and not have to leave the program at all. So, question might be, well, when would the model be expected to perform poorly? One place would be on fields where the nitrogen response is much different than the average fertility trial response. So you have to be honest to your growers that it might not work for all cases. It would likely perform poorly when grain prices and discounts at harvest are substantially different than when you make this determination, and when yield is greatly different than yield potential. It's not going to do very well. But that's a problem with our current system as well, where we just use 2.6 pounds of nitrogen per bushel across the board. If you want to access the model, you can pull this up from the ASA site later. It's on my webpage, or you can email me. In conclusion, economic nitrogen rate calculators allow extension specialists to assist growers and crop advisors in estimating EONR and marginal return. Typical ranges in yield potential I found affected EONR more than typical ranges in prices. And so, backing up, this really points out, again, how important it is for a grower to realistically assess their yield potential. Recent large ranges in protein discounts affect EONR more than recent ranges in fertilizer cost or grain price. And additional user-friendly tools are needed to assist growers in making economically sound management decisions. I'd like to acknowledge the Montana Fertilizer Advisory Committee for funding this work, and also to Bruce Maxwell and Elizabeth D'Imperio for data analysis. Any questions? Yeah, Kurt.
If your protein discounts and premiums seem to really affect how much nitrogen you ought to be applying, what's your thoughts on how late in that growth and development of that wheat can you put nitrogen on and still get a protein response?
Right, so the question was how late can you put on nitrogen and still get a protein response. We feel it's somewhere around heading. In Montana, the unfortunate thing is around heading, sometimes we get no rain or very little rain after that point. So we encourage people to go a little earlier than that. In using this model, though, we are, when the model is generally used, at least in Montana, would be at broadcast fertilization time, which would generally be for winter wheat anytime from September to April. Does that answer your question, Kurt? Okay. Other questions? Yes.
Yes, on that model of following up on protein premiums.
Yes.
How far in advance does a grower know what the premiums will be for a given year?
Right, he doesn't. Last spring, I believe discounts were almost zero, and they spiked to about a record high this last fall. And so, That was one of the problems that I listed in that The grower at fertilization time does not know what the discount's going to be that fall. So all they can do is use, say, average cases or use a range of cases. And that's certainly a problem with any economic model.
But I would assume your protein discounts are pretty much tied to the year, i.e. in a wet year, you probably have, you know, high premiums, and in a dry year, you won't have a whole lot of premium, right?
Sure, they're definitely related, although our discounts are probably more tied to moisture, not in Montana, moisture that occurred in Oklahoma and Kansas and other places. So, but yeah, that's certainly a problem with any nitrogen rate optimizer, is not knowing the discount. When discounts were low for winter wheat, which they've historically been until just about the last year, you might not even include it in a model. But this last year made it, I think, really important to include discounts in your models. Yes?
Could you do that similar thing for phosphorus?
We could not, or I wouldn't feel comfortable with it because we don't have enough phosphorus rate data. And one problem, of course, with phosphorus is that you need both a large range of available phosphorus levels in the soil plus a large range of phosphorus fertilizations. With nitrate, it's pretty easy because you're just adding soil nitrate to fertilizer nitrate. It's one term. But we expect to see, and other people have found, different responses based on the soil test phosphorus level at fertilization. So we would need a lot more fertility trials, unfortunately, than we currently have. Other questions? All right, if you do have other questions, please catch me at either of the breaks.